It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby!
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, hour number two on the flagship of the Silver and Black Raider Nation Radio. At Raiders headquarters on my YouTube channel, as we went from Raiders YouTube, and I don't know when they're going to broadcast that in a couple of hours. They take our first hour of our show every Wednesday. Very honored to say Raiders Rundown, which is doing very good when it comes to the clicks. That's not clickbait. The clicks. We appreciate everybody being there. And then we switch over and I open up my YouTube studio, which I didn't know how to open until my son taught me a couple of months ago. And we're building this platform so you can see what we're doing, which is very important in 2024. For those who are saying, JT, why are you mentioning this YouTube channel? Because why not? We can see the show. And that's where we are in 2024. I started in 96. There was no internet. There was no such thing. Katie Couric never heard of the internet. She said to Brian Gumbel, what is the internet? No one even knew what it was. Now everything's being broadcast. So we're doing that too. In the first hour of the show, they carve it up. They make a TV show Saturday night on ABC, Raiders Rundown. So that's pretty cool. One of the TV shows we do Mondays on Fox 5, the show we do on Saturday nights on ABC. And it's big boy radio, as I like to say here. So good to have everybody here. Vinny Bonsignore will join us in a few moments. I am big on the Yankees. Big. I'm not apologizing for it. I know I got the Raider logo behind me. I am all about the Yankees and the Dodgers. Period. That's my life, my show, me. And that's what I'm doing last night. Insanity ensued in the Bronx where a fan tried to rip the ball out from Mookie Betts' glove, some knucklehead, just a nightmare scenario for a fan. And now that fan's becoming famous because he knew Gronk in college. And then after the game, he went on a couple of platforms and people acknowledged him for being an idiot. You understand now in the society that we live in that we don't broadcast idiots unless you have to put them there, unless you have to put them there on television because they're in the middle of the play. So when it comes to this, this was a very big moment, and we'll talk about it later in the broadcast, where fan interference could have happened. And let me tell you this much. If it turns out, and I'm bringing in Vinny Bonsignore so he can start off with this with all his years in L.A. Vinny, can you imagine last night if Mookie Betts broke his finger or sprained his wrist, which is very common in sports, and was injured, what would have happened today around the world around baseball?
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone that condones it or thinks it's part of the game or that fans have any right to try to inject themselves into the game, what are we thinking here? Absolutely not. That's a non-negotiable. Stay in your lane. If something happens accidentally, that's one thing. But to purposely inject yourself into the action, that's just ridiculous. And anyone that thinks it was funny, anybody thinks that it's part of the game, is being equally ridiculous.
And you know what's crazy about it, Vinny? I was there for game one, the Freddie Freeman walk-off game, and the Yankees looked to hit a home run in game one, and a Dodger fan reached over the fence and interfered with the play. And a lot of Yankee fans where I was sitting, I thought it was a home run, but it wasn't. But this was next level, prying open his glove to try to remove the ball, even though the fan knew he was in foul territory. It wasn't like the fan was even stupider and was in fair territory. I'm just happy that we didn't see an injury. The injury would have been devastating if it was to Mookie. But what do you think of the Yankees' comeback there? It didn't look like Dave Roberts wanted to load up with his best pitchers to win that game.
Yeah, I think it was one of those games where, first of all, I'm glad as a baseball fan that we get to more baseball. That's number one. Number two, it kind of felt like the Dodgers sort of got to a point where that being a bullpen game for them, no, they weren't happy with losing. And yes, they wanted to win, obviously. But I think at some point, Dave Roberts understood that, you know, there's more baseball left for him and he's got to think about another game. And to kind of ride it out with that bullpen game and not necessarily stress the bullpen out any more than he had to begin with, knowing that he was going to need some of those key relievers potentially tonight in a game five. So I think the Dodgers handled that correctly. I thought the Yankees handled themselves correctly. The danger for the Dodgers is that you might have, awakened a little bit of a sleeping giant. And the one thing we know about baseball, guys can get on a roll at the turn of a dime. And it's not unfathomable for the Yankees to win a couple more games, especially tonight and force a game six. That happens all the time in baseball. The Yankees have won three straight, four straight, plenty of times this year. So it's not out of the question that they can do that in, you know, over these next couple of games.
Vinny Bonsignor is our guest. So we both spoke to Antonio Pierce today. It's kind of tough, Vinny. He's showing up to me, and he's coming to the podium where you asked the first question with a 2-6 team. That was never the plan, and I don't think this was a 2-6 team if they didn't suffer as many injuries as they did and have to fight through these injuries and then the poor quarterback play. It's kind of gotten away from them, which was not the plan. It's never the plan for a head coach here, but I've said this. I think Antonio Pierce is handling it well. Seems like the locker room is together. He's getting some players back healthier. But going back to Kansas City, that's a game they could have won. They were up 10-7 in that game. And as we've talked about in the first hour of this show, it's the end of the half and the start of the third quarter where they had nothing and went 3-and-out, which was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, no question about it. And, the inability to score at the 3-yard line, that was that was basically the ball game right there, and it was the second week in a row that the Raiders were set up inside the five of their opponent and couldn't punch it in from there. And you talk about the injuries and the turnovers and the penalties. No question, that's all played into it. But at the end of the day, not being able to execute at a high level when only the highest level is required or needed. That's going to be something that the Raiders, look back on this year and already are with a lot of regret because these games have been winnable. Every single one of them, except for the Carolina game, has been a winnable game. And, where the Raiders are in their journey right now in terms of the talent and in terms of the caliber of quarterback play that they have, they can't cut any corners. They can't leave any boxes unchecked. And it feels like every single game there's something. There's some sort of element that's holding them back, whether it's the penalties, whether it's the turnovers, or whether it's just a lack of execution, at critical moments like we saw last week against the Kansas City Chiefs. You just can't have that. And, that's where they are right now. There are certain teams, the Kansas City Chiefs included. The Kansas City Chiefs have overcome plenty of turnovers from Patrick Mahomes this year, but they have a good enough defense, a timely enough offense, to be able to navigate their way through some treacherous times or the choppy waters that they encounter. The Raiders just aren't at the caliber of team that can do that right now. And so there is regret when they look back at all these winnable games and understanding that, but for, some whether it's sloppy execution, some questionable play calling, some turnovers, or the penalties that they've suffered, they could have won, at least a couple more of those games.
Vinny Bonsignor, as we wrap it up. Vinny, I spoke to the coach about it, and I know he mentioned it to you. The inability to get the Brock Bowers, get him the ball in the red zone, to me it's inexcusable. It is. I mean, the coach is going to take the high road. I kind of take the high road. We, this is how we conduct our business. But to not be able to put him out wide with a fade because he catches it in the middle of the field, he caught like 30 of them at Georgia. There's a YouTube channel of all his touchdowns in Georgia, which is a freak show of him going up in coverage. And to run the ball out of the shotgun when Brock Bowers is out there without a touchdown, it almost brings me back to Darren Waller when the Raiders lost in the playoffs at Cincinnati and they had first and goal at the 9. And I'm like, go to him on every play. Give yourself a chance to get the ball to your best player in the red zone. And the Raiders go backwards. It's inconceivable to me that they run it into a pile, and then on fourth down, they go backwards.
Yeah, and, just analyzing that, and I've watched it a few times. I mean, they get to the one-yard line on the first play, and you got to be able to make a yard there, JT.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to run it as well. Mm-hmm. So, it wasn't like they got knocked backwards initially. If it had been first down run at the 3 and they lost the 2 yards, then I'm completely with you. When you get to the 1 yard line and you can't punch it in on second down from the 1, and then you try it again on third down, that's the play that I probably would have done something different. But my goodness, second and 1 from the 1 yard line, you got to be able as a football team an NFL team, you got to be able to pound that rock in right there. They didn't, and obviously it cost them. I'll say this, too. Looking back at the film, there are plenty of opportunities for Brock Bowers. Where to me, Gardner Minshew just missed him. Not in that situation right there, but throughout the game. And I know there's been a lot of finger pointing at maybe Luke Getsy for not targeting Brock Bowers. But we don't know what the play call is on those plays where Gardner looks elsewhere or, you know, gets rid of the ball quickly because he's feeling pressure. Because if you watch the tape, you see that there's designs for Brock Bowers to get open. I don't know that they're not intentionally targeting him with the play call. I do wonder, and I'm going to talk to Gardner Minshew about this, you know, a little bit later on today. Are there play calls for him that because of what the defense did or what Gardner saw and maybe went in a different direction that go above and beyond the actual play call? You know, so we'll see about that. But on that, again, I go back to that first and goal of the three, and you get it to the 1 yard line, you got to be able to punch it in from there. And you have to be able to do it as an NFL team as a run, because that's what you're supposed to be all about. I do think that if the situation is different this week against the Cincinnati Bengals, maybe they'll try something different and pass it. But gosh, they did that the week before. They threw it three straight times, and one of those, I know that they were trying to design it to get to Brock Bowers against the Rams and couldn't make up any yards. So darned if you do, darned if you don't at this point. Yeah.
Vinny, last one, and I don't know if we'll talk to you before the trade deadline. Historically, I haven't been a big trade deadline guy. I haven't. It just doesn't seem to work. And this organization didn't do it much. Al Davis was a Maverick. He was the best evaluator of our lifetime. Where does Tom Telesco stand here? Because you don't get a lot in return. You see all these sixth-round, fifth-round picks. That could be valuable if you're going to package a bunch of them to trade up and get a quarterback. I typically look at a trade as the ability to get a contract off the books, like Devontae Adams. Now, people are going second or third. It could be a second. No, it's the money. You want to get the money off the books, but with cap hits and something that you're pretty good at, one of the many things you are here, where do the Raiders stand? Are there any viable options to either bring in a player or forget about it and maybe possibly move a player?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about bringing somebody in, and I don't think that, you know the Raiders are shopping any of their players. But, you know, I guess you would have to, if somebody came calling for a Jacoby Myers, if somebody came calling for a Colton Miller, you'd have to at least listen at that point and start weighing, you know, what the offer is, and does that offer supersede what Jacoby Myers is to you right now and could be to a young quarterback as early as next year. And the same goes for Colton Miller. But I would imagine that there is some interest from other teams on some of the players that the Raiders do have. And I know Tom Telesco knows this. He wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't at least listen to what that offer might be. Now, I'm not saying that there are firm offers that are being made for any of the Raider players, or if Tom, you know, is just saying, hey, look, We're closed for business. But knowing Tom Telesco, I would imagine that at the very least he's going to listen and then weigh whatever any offer might be with what does that player mean for you in the short term and the long term. And by long term, I mean next year. Because you imagine that the Raiders are going to be back in the quarterback business. Maybe it's in the draft. And what you would want to do, whether it's with extra draft picks to fortify the infrastructure around him or by holding on to a Jacoby Myers or a Colton Miller, if that means that it gives you what you believe is a better infrastructure around that young quarterback. But I would imagine some teams are making some calls on some of these Raiders for sure.
Thank you, Vinny. Safe travels to Cincinnati. We'll talk to you after the bye week.
All right. Good luck to your Yankees, JT.
Good luck. Thank you. Appreciate it. Vinny grew up with the Mets. I grew up with the Yankees. Vinny's covered the Dodgers out in L.A., but we want to talk Raiders football there. And what he just said about Tom Telesco and what Tom's looking at everything. The one encouraging sign after this season, and it's the season's not over, and I'm not doing off-season radio. I'm just not going to do it, is the fact that the team's going to have a lot of money. Team's going to have a lot of money to get players who are available that they can go get that could be truly impact players, and it looks like they're going to have some high draft picks. Now, the problem that I have on this platform is that too many Raider fans want to get the first pick overall in the draft. They do. They want to lose games and tank. They want to tank, a word I don't use, and they want to get some player that they don't know how to pronounce his name. Imagine me doing a radio show like that and being such a fool to sit here and go, okay, let's open up the phones in October. Who do you want? Shador? Can you even spell Shador? You know who he is? Deion's son. That's the guy you want? So you want to lose every game to get him. Okay, you don't want him. Who do you want there? Cam Ward of Miami? All right. Where do you think he's going to be? Number one overall, number 10 overall, number six? You don't know. So, of course, the higher the draft pick, higher to number one, you should get a better player. Well, come back to me and let me know how that worked out with some of the players like Clelin Ferrell. Ask me how it works out over the years with other players. Now, you could get a very good player with the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh pick. But I choose to live my life daily to try to win football games, to watch and evaluate teams that win. And if the Raiders get the seventh pick or the fourth pick or the third pick or the eighth pick, is it going to be the end of the world? Well, for some fans, it will be. Because this past year, you could have had Jaden Daniels, and if the Raiders got Jaden Daniels, the franchise would be set for 15 years. Not 10, 15. He would never leave the building. They would franchise tag him, they would pay him, they would do new contracts. Same thing with Caleb Williams. But the Raiders weren't poor enough last year in regards to losing as many games to get that pick. So we're going to talk about this at length. What do you think I'm going to do here in February, March, April, May, June? And we got 5 days a week mostly to do shows on what the draft is going to look like. I told Bobby and a couple other people, the only player that I would want more than any player available is Arch Manning. Because I know that his grandfather, Archie, was great. Peyton was great. Eli was great. And I would say, go get that guy. Go get that guy. And I'm pretty confident that Arch Manning would be our franchise quarterback, and he's not available. So I'm not doing draft talk, but I'll talk about the Bengals. I'll talk about the money that's available. And any other topic is not off limits. None of these topics are off limits. I'm just trying to let you know what I think makes for a better show. And what doesn't make for a great show here is letting and enjoying fans complain constantly about a draft pick. You want to complain about the offensive coordinator? You want to complain about the quarterback? Have at it. Have at it. I just said be respectful. Don't call them names. Don't call them names. You know, I'd walk you right into the locker room holding your arm saying, okay, here's the guy you're calling a name. Say it to his face. You wouldn't do that. So treat it like that on the radio. I am frustrated about Brock Bowers. Now, you might say, well, how could you be frustrated? He's playing great. He leads the league in receptions more than Ja'Marr Chase. Come on. But he's not getting meaningful receptions that are winning games, and he's not getting meaningful receptions, which are touchdowns. And I don't have any confidence that he's going to get more. That's why I want to go with a quarterback change. And as I said, if you don't want to make a quarterback change, that's great. How many times in the history of Raiders Radio have I ever sat behind a microphone in Oakland, in L.A., or in Vegas where I said I'd like to see a quarterback play over another? Not many. Not many. I'm telling you. Not because I wasn't allowed to, because I didn't believe in it. You know, I was pretty good with Jimmy Garoppolo until he got hurt. Then you're obviously going to go with Aiden O'Connell. But I think that Desmond Ridder is probably a better quarterback than Gardner Minshew. Because Gardner Minshew has had weeks, if not months, to prove that he can handle this playbook, that he can make good decisions, and that he can lead the team to victory, and he hasn't been able to do it. So I'm ready for a change. And I think it's an important change here, and I don't think they're going to do it, because they probably want to get Desmond Ridder to the bye week. But that'd be cool if the team was 4-4. The team's 2-6 and out of it. And Ridder was a superstar in Cincinnati. So imagine if Ridder was allowed to play, and he might. They're going to make that decision later in the week. I think Gardner's speaking. So it looks all accounts are it's going to be Gardner who's going to play. But that doesn't excite anybody anymore. And that's why I'm kind of bummed out for Gardner Minshew. We were all excited to see him play. We all want him to do well. Who doesn't want to do well out of Raider fans? You want him to do well, but now he hasn't done any of that. So I don't want to see him start again. I'd like to see Desmond Ridder play because I think he could be really good. And he'd have a lot of juice going back to Cincinnati with Trey Tucker where they played, where all the fans know him on the Bengals and think he's great. Remember, those Bengal fans are Cincinnati football fans. And they watch Ridder play at a really high level. I didn't watch him play at a high level other than highlights and SportsCenter and what he did leading Cincinnati to the most success they had in decades. but I remember him, and I remember him making plays. He reminded me a lot of Taylor Heinicke. Remember when Taylor Heinicke's on the Commanders and he's winning games? And you're like, who's this guy Taylor Heinicke who's winning? Well, he wasn't on a good team. The Commanders stunk. And the same thing with Desmond Ridder. He's playing for Atlanta. He didn't play on a very good team. The team wasn't very good, and he did okay. So I don't need to see Gardner play anymore. Why would I want to see Gardner start another game unless he starts another game, and then I'll get behind him completely on game day? But as I sit here in Raiders headquarters, if Ridder was able to play, I'd be jacked up about it. I'd be juiced. I'd be like, wow, we're going to let this kid play in Cincinnati, where he knows every restaurant, every bar, every watering hole. He's got friends and family, and yeah, I want to see this guy play. And then if he plays well and wins and outplays Joe Burrow, and there's a chance he could, and he finds Brock Bowers in the end zone, something Gardner Minshew seems like he's not able to do, then you got the bye week to get Ridder ready to go up against Tua. And if they let Gardner play and he plays well, he'll play in Miami. If he doesn't play well, it'll be Ridder. And will it be Ridder as long as he plays well, or will they go right back to Aiden O'Connell? I just don't think that Brock could play in another game like this where he gets early targets and they forget about him late. That is exclusively on the quarterback and the play caller. If Antonio Pierce wants to sit down in a room, I don't know if he's done it or not, if he wanted to sit down in a room, Luke Getsy and Gardner Minshew, and say, hey guys, come here for a second, I'm the head coach. What are you doing? Like, what are you actually doing that you're not getting the ball to Brock in the red zone? And if Gardner said, well, that's not the play that was called, then he could look at Luke Getsy and go, Luke, why aren't you calling Brock Bowers' plays in the end zone? And then if he says, Luke Getsy says, I am, but Gardner's checking out of it. If I was Gardner Minshew and I was in the red zone inside the 10-yard line and I got a play, and I'm not telling him to break the rules, believe me, I've never gone there. But if Gardner Minshew is calling a run play, which they seem to like to call out of the shotgun, and Gardner just wants to look there and go, you know, no, I don't like the coverage here. They're stacking the box with Chris Jones. I'm out of this play. He's allowed to do that. Why isn't he doing that? Why is Gardner Minshew looking at the line of scrimmage, going to hand it off up the middle, and Chris Jones is laughing at him, going, please run it at me, and Gardner not going, check, check, kill, kill, and telling the receivers who are bunched in for whatever reason I don't understand and have those receivers go wide to open it up more to take the defenders from Kansas City or Cincinnati out wide and then just roll out, sprint out, and look for Brock? How bleeping long have I been urging and telling everyone, where is the sprint roll out to the right with Brock trailing over the middle, starting left, coming over to the right, so Gardner can either tuck and run to the pylon or throw it to Brock? Where's that play? I mean, is it a hard play? And another thing I said earlier today, if you didn't catch it, in the history of this league, I'm going to give you three names. Three names. Okay, follow these three names, and if you're younger, Google it. That would be Bill Walsh, Sid Gillum, and Al Davis. Okay, those three names, Google them. I think you know who I'm talking about. They left all the plays. There's no more plays. There's literally no more plays. And I tell you something, you're going to go nuts when I tell you Josh McDaniels, because he was the designer of the plays for six Super Bowls, or at least five of them. He had the playbook here and didn't use it the way he used it in New England. So all the plays that could be run for Brock Bowers has been run dating back to the tight end position, where you had some of the greatest tight ends, including John Mackey, where they named the college tight end award after. Mike Ditka, might remember Coach Ditka from the Bears, who's a great tight end for Dallas. And then you go through Kellen Winslow Sr. I watched him play. Wow, what a player he was. Guy by the name of Tony Gonzalez. And then there's a great one, maybe as good as all of them, and Travis Kelce. All you need is an intern to go follow and look at all their plays at tight end. They've all been run. Run the same ones to Brock. You don't have to come up with new plays. You don't need AI. You don't need to enhance your playbook and come up with something new. You don't need a new play because everyone's seen every play because Bill Walsh coached in this league with Joe Montana. And he had a guy named Dwight Clark who could play wide receiver and act like a tight end. And they had really good players back then too. I don't know why it is so difficult to run plays to Brock Bowers in the red zone. I don't understand it. You drafted him because he excelled at that at Georgia. What are we doing? What are we doing? And if I was the quarterback, which I'm not, I'd speak up. Because Brock's not going to. Brock's a great kid. He's just going to sit there and do what he's, you know, asked to do. He's a gentleman. But if I was the quarterback and I was 2-6, if I was 2-6 and starting in Cincinnati, I'd be going to Brock every chance I could for one reason. There's going to be a ball someday that says Brock Bowers' first ever touchdown. And I would want my name as the quarterback on that ball. If it's Gardner Minshew or Desmond Ridder to Brock Bowers, 31 yards, touchdown, and Brock has that the rest of his life on his mantle, I'd like to have my name on that ball if I was the quarterback. I don't understand it. I don't think all the plays suck. You do. Many in the Raider Nation go crazy. Vinny just dipped the show in reality when Vinny basically just said, hey, man, there are times you got to run the ball. I agree. Vinny made a really good point saying that on first and goal at the three, they got to the one. They can't run it. They're not powerful enough. They're not good enough. The interior of that offensive line is obviously not big and strong enough. JPJ is a rookie. He's going to grow into a man, a big size, strong man. He's not there yet. Andre James does not have a size advantage over most people. Dylan Parham's hurt. Colt Miller is not the player he once was, at least with the injury. Hopefully he can get back to that. And Thayer Mumford, they're lining up at wide receiver. I mean, come on. Oh, and the big thing, Michael Mayer, which I have nothing for you on Michael Mayer, but losing Michael Mayer pretty much the entire year, or as long as he's going to be out, we lose another offensive lineman who's a bulldozer. Bulldozer if you run by him, behind him. We're going to still try to run the ball? Okay, run it. Run it in the first quarter, second quarter. But if the game's close, get the ball to Brock Bowers. And that is really simple for me to say. I mean, this isn't me being, you know, a scientist here. This is very basic football 101. That's what we can get going. Jimmy in Kansas City starting us off. Hello, Jimmy. What's happening? Are you a Raider-friendly guy or a Chief guy?
Oh, I'm a huge Chief guy, yeah.
Oh, then how'd you find my show? Because, you know, I would think ahead of time you'd be a prank caller or you'd be busting my How do you find my show in Kansas City? I love this.
Well, I'm out here in Vegas now, and you are a friend I know works with you.
Okay.
His name's James. And
excellent.
He turned me on to the station, and I just called not to belittle or criticize.
Mm-hmm.
I called to tell you what a breath of fresh air you are. You wear your heart on your sleeve. You have information. You're very entertaining. You get it. You know what you're doing. And I just wanted to call you to tell you how delightful, and I'm a Chiefs fan, how delightful I am to have found your show.
That is very kind, even from behind enemy lines locally. That's a nice compliment. I don't get many of them. I don't look for many of them, but I appreciate it when I get it. So thank you. You beat the Raiders. Did you see anything encouraging in that game? Because the Raiders wanted to knock off your undefeated Kansas City Chiefs.
Encouraging from my team?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, my expectations are high, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, to be completely transparent, I had told a friend of mine I thought we would win that game by 40. Boy, was I disappointed. So, I would say we didn't play as well as we could, but your team played much better than I thought they would, and I was shocked. I was like, wow, you guys really put up a good defense. And I see your point about Brock Bowers. Why are they not giving him the ball more? I guess that's between the coaches. But the guy's an unbelievable talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know what else to tell you about that game. It was closer than it should have been. but yep. you put up a good fight.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you finding the show. Keep calling in. Thank you very much.
You take care.
All right, there you go. Wow, that was a bit of a surprise. A humbling phone call. Thank you to Jimmy, the Kansas City Chief fan. And look, that kind of bothered me at the end. We put up a good fight. That's what you say to people who lose. You lost, but you were tougher than we thought. We don't need that anymore. We need to find ways to win. Okay, it's about winning in this building. This building is all about winning, coming from Oakland and L.A., and we got to win more in Vegas. 702-365-9200. You should be calling in. I don't have a guest the rest of the way. We had a lot today. The first hour will be broadcast on YouTube coming up. So let me get a few in here. I want to get in Golden Entertainment. They own PT's, the best happy hour in town. 5 to 7, midnight to 2. I want to thank Tito's Handmade Vodka. I got a Remy Martin event tonight, a Remy Martin dinner / scotch tasting before the Yankee game. And Resorts World, four of our clients and partners. We'll talk about more coming up.
No, now when you look at the skilled players and the quarterback and then defensively, yeah, it might be a bad year for them from that standpoint. When you watch them, they're sound, they're in the right places. Question was asked earlier about, you know, the pressures. They give you a lot of things to think about. So, no, we're not worried about it. I mean, yeah, we got to look at it like they look at us as 2-6, but our records both could be flipped. The game could have went a lot of ways in both of our games, but our record is what it is, and somebody has to win this game, right? And we need a win, more importantly, and that's all we're worried about.
Antonio Pierce is a stand-up guy. JT, back with you. You just heard the 872 Labors, led by Tommy White and his team, that builds this city constantly on time and on budget. We'd like to thank the 872 Laborers. They listen to this show because they stop me and they tell me I was there with the 872 Laborers when I had a hard hat on, and they were building the stadium. They were building it, trying to blow up and dynamite the Caliche, the Hard Rock, to build the Legion Stadium. So you better believe they're my proud partner because I'm their partner. I love the 872 and what they do. If you want to hear a stat about Brock Bowers that's not getting enough coverage, 39 minutes, 18 seconds. 39 minutes, 18 seconds of game time and 27 offensive plays went between Brock's last catch in the second quarter, when the Raiders went up by 3, by the way, in that drive, and his next catch with the Raiders down 14 in the fourth quarter. That's a failure of Brock Bowers. Not him. Failure of the coaches to get Brock Bowers the ball. That's it. You want to blame it? And I'm all for putting the blame on Gardner Minshew. We're in the business. We have to analyze these games. I can't make this stuff up. So don't let it happen again. How many times did I sit here under Josh McDaniels and literally say, where was Michael Mayer? Why did Michael Mayer catch a gorgeous touchdown and not get a target for two more quarters? I don't know. I don't get that. And you cannot tell me after doing this and being a fan for over 50 years, which means I'm not a player, I'm not a coach. Believe me, I'm not claiming I know more than any coach. I'm not. But I know football. And I've been to a lot more games than a lot of these coaches. Believe it or not, you get a coach who's 34 years old, then I'm 20-plus years older, then I guarantee I've been to more football games than that coach. I don't know more than the current roster from that coach, nor would I ever give that insinuation, but I know enough to sit behind a microphone and talk football. And I can tell you this, is Captain Obvious stuff. Get the ball to Brock Bowers and stop it. No more 5 targets games. It should be a minimum of 8 to 10. And don't go long stretches without him getting the ball. Or at least the quarterback should look over at the bench and say, what? No, we're not running that play. I'm the quarterback. I'm going to change the play, and we're going to Brock. That's it. That's all I want to see. You don't have a lot more complaints from me. The team is decimated by injuries. They're banged up. They're injured. I'm aware of that. You're aware of that. And we're trying to get through this tough, difficult time now. That's all we're doing. We're not sitting here making fun of the coaches or the team or anything. We want the team to win. But they got to play better to win. That's all we've said. Save Raider in Connecticut on the Raiders mobile app. What's happening?
JT, the last time I called you, Told you I'd do a little stand-up comedy. I was trying to give you my John Sterling, but we was up against the clock. Let me gift you my John Sterling.
Go ahead.
So I was saying, during his Little League days, his mother used to bake him these cookies. And we noticed that every time he had some batch of mother's cookies, he'll have a great game. Low and outside, 0-2. And that tradition has even extended to the major leagues. I guarantee you there's some of mother's cookies in that dugout. Hit hard. That ball is high. That ball is far. That ball is gone. The Yankees win. Yankees win. God bless you, JT.
I hope that happens tonight. I know Sterling messed up a Judge ball that was hit. I thought it was hit out of the stadium. And John Sterling's 83 or 84. Someone Google it for me. John Sterling, voice of the Yankees. So John would come on my show from time to time, like once a year. I always tell the story, the longtime voice of the Yankees, known for his home run calls. I despise the Giancarlo Stanton call because he says, that's a Stantonian blast. And then he goes, Giancarlo, dosi no no palo. And I'm like, don't do that, John. You don't have to do that. But when he calls a Judge home run and he says, it is high, it is far, it is gone, all rise for the Judge. That is one of the greatest home run calls of all time. All rise for the Judge. I mean, that is brilliant. But now the Yankees need John Sterling, who they brought out of retirement, to call the postseason. Several people have asked me in the last 24 hours, several, including my son, and all that, is that can we come back and win? Of course we can. But it's highly unlikely. It's highly unlikely to go and beat the Dodgers 3 in a row, 2 of them in Dodger Stadium. So here's what I would like. I would like them to win this game tonight. And I'll tell you why on a personal level. It's the last game at Yankee Stadium this year. No more games. It's not coming back. I would like those fans, and I know a few of them are going to be there tonight, who are going to be there. And if they don't win the series, they could leave the stadium and go have a beer at stands and say, you know, Yanks won 2 out of 3. And remember, the Yankees should have won game one. Should have. They were down to the final out. What would have happened there if they won game one and then they won two, which would be tonight the second one? They'd be up 3-2. Right? Only needing one more win. But Freddie Freeman hit that grand slam. And then I could sit back and think of the time of being with my son, my youngest son at game one, getting my guts ripped out in front of me. And I would say, I could live with that. You know, I was at a classic game, all-time game. Yankees won a couple of games. They didn't get swept. They didn't get swept. And they're all right. So that's what I want tonight. But believe me, when this show wraps up, so to take you behind the scenes, this is my hell day is Sunday, Monday, but in a good way. It's a nice part of hell, which is, let me take that back. I call it a hell day because it starts early in the morning and it ends really late Monday night. And there's no possible time to sleep. There's none. Like usually, you know, when you get 2 hours to sleep, you go, oh my God, I can't wait. I got 2 hours. I'm not that guy. I can't sleep in 2 hours. If you put me and tell me I can only sleep 2 hours, I'm not going to sleep. So then I come out of Monday. I get back there Tuesday. As my wife calls it, it's a recovery day for me. Recover at home. Watch The Penguin. Or watch some shows, right? And then on Wednesday, I interview the coach. Do you know how many guys on earth, if you add up the population of China and India, just India and China, all those people in the world, they make up most of the world. They don't interview Antonio Pierce. I do. So Tuesday, I'm on my best behavior. And then I come in and I interview the coach, which I take very seriously. And then I get to Wednesday night, and I act like a 16-year-old trying to sneak into a bar. I want to go out. I want to party. I want to go to concerts. And my wife's like, oh, here you go. I can see you. We've been married 25 years. You know, oh, hey, look at him. He wants to go out. He's calling all his friends. He wants to go out to Virgin, go down to One Steak. He wants to go out with his buddies. Yeah, I do. I don't apologize for that. I have fun. I'm not going to let this record bring me down, but the last couple of weeks have been tough. Not been easy, man. Raiders losing, Yankees losing. I mean, it's been hard, man, the last couple of weeks. I deserve a Modelo for the fighting spirit. I've never snuck in a Modelo, nor would I, into Lotus Broadcasting or the Raider headquarters. They got cameras everywhere. And I normally don't have a beverage till the weekend. Wink, wink. Dave in Chicago on the Raiders mobile app. Hello, Dave. Dave is not there. We didn't check him. Dave is gone. All right, so we'll give you one last opportunity to jump in here if you'd like. 702-365-9200. I'm going to Miami. We have an announcement tomorrow on the party that I'm a part of throwing it. If you know me, in the history of the Raiders, nobody other than John Vella, let's give John Vella credit, no one throws a better party than when I and the Black Hole get together. And do we got a big one down in Miami we'll tell you about tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it has to get better. You know, there's been a lot of opportunities for us to score points and make opportunities. And, yeah, that's on the play caller. But then also, like I told our staff and I told our players, it's all of us. It's easy to sit here and just point the finger at Luke or myself. But, you know, you look at O-line play, quarterbacks, the running backs, you know, turnovers, missed blocks, missed executions on plays, alignments of details. All those things have to get cleaned up. It does start with the coordinator. He's got to be the one that takes the fall for that and gets most of the blame. But it is collective.
Wow, that's a strong comment by Antonio Pierce on Luke Getsy. JT, back with you. This is Big Boy Radio, as we said. It's Big Boy Radio. If you're calling the plays and the plays aren't working, you got to have new plays and you got to keep your job by getting the offense to score. When you're the head coach, you're in charge of the coaches underneath you. You got to insist that you want your vision to be a winning vision, which I know Antonio Pierce does. Again, when you were coming at me hard on Josh McDaniels, I'm like, look, what do you want me to tell you? I'm here every week interviewing him. He's a good guy. He wants to win. All he does is win. He's not winning now. And I really questioned his play calling. I didn't question the culture in the locker room, you know, until at the end when he was going to get let go and everybody knew and it was kind of end. It was the end. It was pretty obvious to everybody. He got fired after Detroit. He got fired on Halloween. Remember, Halloween. And it's the same thing with John Gruden, Rich Bisaccia, Dennis Allen, Arch Shell, Norv Turner, all the coaches that I've worked with in the past and the GMs. All of them pretty much, and I mean most of them, if not all of them, are great football minds who deserve to get their jobs and tried to win. And if they weren't here, it's because they lost. That's it. It's really easy to understand. It happens, and you know it happens in every city. So here's a team that's been decimated by injuries. A lot of guys are hurt. There are potential excuses, and I don't hear any. I get a moment to spend with Antonio Pierce after our interview. We talk. He's a good guy. He has a lot of respect for me. I have a lot of respect for him. I want him to win. He knows I got a job to do. And it's not hostile. It's not hostile. You know, you want him to do well, and you want Luke Getsy to do well. You want all the coaches to do well. And it's tough. It's tough sledding right now. The only thing that's going to help is winning. And then you're fighting a tsunami of fans who don't want to win. Not easy. Not easy to deal with that. All right, back to the Yankees and Dodgers as we get ready for Game 5. The Volpe Grand Slam was really interesting to me. Volpe grew up a fan of Jeter when he was a little boy. I'm talking like 6-7 years old. He looked up to Derek Jeter. Yankees couldn't get anything going in this game, and Volpe had a bad base running moment when Wells hit the top of the wall and he didn't score from second. He tagged up poorly and he was in between and he was going to get railed out of New York, but he came to the rescue with this grand salami.
As Hudson deals, swung on and hit in the air to left field and deep. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam.
Don't know why that didn't breathe another 30 seconds. It normally does. But someone back at the other company edited it right there, and it just ended on Grand Slam. Amazing to me. So that was a big moment in that game. It was absolutely incredible that Volpe hit that Grand Slam. He's the last guy in your order. He's a little shortstop. He's not very strong. And he saved the game for the Yankees. He absolutely saved the game. And then Gleyber Torres, kind of the cherry on top as the Yankees were pounding the Dodgers.
Well, here's the 1-1 to Gleyber. A fly ball to deep right. Betts going back. That ball is gone! It's Gleyber Day.
Yep, it's Labor Day. And again, been doing this almost 30 years, man, the editors. Oh, okay. And then, I'm not blaming you, Bobby. I can hear you. I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming the editors who don't know how to let a soundbite breathe. You don't cut off a soundbite when he says home run. You let it breathe and you hear the crowd in the Bronx. Maybe we'll get that. So far, I'm 0 for 2. Let's get to the final call.
Now, here's the 2-2 to Smith. Swung on, a fly ball to center. Judge is there to make the catch. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
John Sterling has radio voice, man. That guy get a cup of tea. A voice of the Yankees there, so I'll be watching that tonight, and I'm looking forward to getting some good entertainment watching the World Series. I mean, it's a World Series, everybody, and we're talking Raider football. They're 2-6. We're honored to be able to talk Raiders, but the World Series is bigger on Tuesday, now Wednesday, than anything else. So we'll see if they're able to do it. I don't think Dodger fans are nervous. They won't admit it. But if the Dodgers lose this game, Derek Jeter said last night, they're going to get nervous getting on that plane. If the Dodgers have to pack up, this is what I want to tell you. I had a buddy of mine who works at the Bronx. He works for the Yankees indirectly. He's a contractor to the Yankees. So I reached out to him, and he told me, you won't believe how much ice-cold beer and champagne. Ice-cold beer and champagne. Got to have it. The Dodgers win. They win the World Series. They're going to cover up the locker room in the Yankee Stadium, their locker room, spray champagne everywhere, and they're going to have to clean it up, change the carpets and all that. All of that champagne for the Dodgers is on ice. It's on ice. Yeah, it's on ice, and it's there again for tonight. So if they have to unpack all that champagne and beer and give it to the Yankees before they head there, it could happen. But Dodger fans shouldn't be nervous. They got to win one of the next three games there. And if not, I just want the Dodgers to have some pressure. A lot of Dodger fans want to win it all on Fernando Valenzuela's birthday. I can understand that. What a show today. Thanks to everyone at Silver and Black Productions. Thanks to Bobby back at Lotus. Who'd we have today? Lincoln Kennedy, Antonio Pierce, Levi Edwards, and Vinny Bonsignor. You tell me a flagship radio station that has that lineup on a Wednesday. I can tell you every other station that doesn't. We're lucky because we got Q Myers putting this together. He's coming up next with a big show. He was there for the press conference today. Go Yankees tonight for me. We'll be back with another show tomorrow, and then we're wrapping it up and heading out to bye week next week. We'll tell you what we're going to do there. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.